You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Andrea V. Wright. Andrea, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Brainerd. It's a pleasure to be here.
Andrea, so I'm going to talk about your work, but I know you're calling from Bath, and I'd love to hear a little more about Bath. I don't know, I have these kind of very romantic images of Bath being this sort of extraordinary city, is it? I know you've moved, I think, out and then back again because you went to school there, but what is Bath like? Why are you living in Bath? Why is it beautiful?
Okay, so Bath is extremely beautiful. It's a heritage city, and it's very romantic. And right now I'm looking at outside my window, and there's this beautiful Bath stone building, Georgian buildings, and sort of rolling countryside and beyond. I've lived here for 4 years, and I did study my master's in Bath at Bath Spa University, but I actually grew up in London. So, it was just a change of gear, really, and my husband got a job in Bristol, which is a city nearby, and we just saw it as a chance to, you know, get away from the high prices of studios, houses, etc., mortgages in London, and sort of change gear in our lives.
And so I guess I wasn't so far from the truth. Bath is something very beautiful. I've never visited. I've always wanted to, but it sounds like it's, a very unusual place, right? As you're saying, it's a heritage site, so there's, you know, it's known globally as something extraordinary. But as an artist, how is the culture of artists there? I've interviewed other artists for there, so I know there's some artists there. But how do you find the culture of artists as opposed to London?
So the culture is very different from London. It's far less urban and edgy. But there is a community here, I guess, because of the university. There are, you know, students who stay on living here after they graduate. So it's, you know, but, you know, you compensate, don't you? You have a place perhaps that doesn't have the same sort of urgency and culture of in a city or a capital city, but then you perhaps get a bit more studio space, it's a bit more affordable, and these are the sort of decisions that a lot of artists in London especially are making. You know, do I stay here? Can I afford to stay here, or do I move out somewhere else? So now you'll find in the UK that there's a lot of communities, artist communities, globally as well, where people are moving out of those, you know, central sort of cities after graduating and, you know, finding other communities and building a community elsewhere.
Yeah, that's so true. That's happening everywhere. And tell me a little bit about what you're working on now. What are you working on at the moment in your studio?
So at the moment, I've got two upcoming group exhibitions. One is based around drawing. It's a big draw festival here in the UK. And I'm providing the sculptural element to that drawing show. So my practice there will be showing a piece called Vertical Ascension, which is made from steel and wood. And it's a very much geometric piece, and utilizing a light that shines on the piece, I trace off the shadows using tape, and that, you know, then starts a dialogue with the space, and I then build this really sort of expansive drawing.
And this is Vertical Ascension. Yeah. I mean, just to stay with that, I want to go to the other one, but you're talking about Vertical Ascension as being installed in this group show.
Yeah.
So to talk a little bit more about that, because I've seen images of it, but it's one of those works of art that an image is deceptive, right? Because what's happening is there's, as I see it and what I know about it, there's a sculpture, but then the sculpture also has lines that are connected to the wall, the drawing, which when you photograph it, I would think has multiple effects, right? Like those drawings, and maybe that wasn't how it was intended, but you know how there are these drawings that are made in a space where you look at it from one angle and the whole drawing comes together another angle and it's blown apart. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
So it seems in yours, I mean, it's fascinating what's happening, but it's very much experiential, isn't it? Because I, even in the images that we'll show in this interview, it's how the photograph was taken that determines how the lines are running around the walls.
That's right. So it's very much an experience, you know, even in the making of it, the handling the materials, you know, from the welding, connecting the wooden elements using dowels. You know, there's a very physical element in assembling a piece like that because it's of the scale. The scale is, you know, just larger than human scale, just beyond the reach, you know, the expanse of my reach. And then once those pieces are made, bringing in the light and then using that source to shine a light through the actual solid image, and then you get these shadows that are created on the walls and the floors, and there then comes that extra dimension to the piece with the tape that's tracing off the lines. Every line that's traced with the tape is exactly how, you know, the shadow is in that space. And so, yes, when you move around it, again, applying the tape to the walls is quite performative. And then, you know, with the viewer, they have that chance, you know, that a photo can't quite create, to experience the change of the angles and dimensions as they walk around the piece.
Ah, that's clear. It's so interesting, right? Because it's a difficult piece to explain, and it always strikes mm-hmm. me that, yeah, I talk with artists, interview artists about visual work when I'm looking at them, although there'll be images. But what you're saying, yeah, really explains how it's put together. And this particular piece, Vertical Ascension, has that been cited in a number of different situations? Because it can be rebuilt and cited in different places. Is that correct?
That's correct. It can be rebuilt. And I have shown it before in more of a commercial space. And that was quite interesting because, again, you know, it changed and altered, you know, each time the situation changes depending on the space it's exhibited in. So yeah, this will be the second time I've shown it, so I'm very excited about that. And alongside it, I will be running a spatial drawing workshop as part of the exhibition experience. And that's when I really get to enable other artists or students to explore that medium.
So tell me a little bit about that spatial drawing workshop, and then I want to move on to the other show that you're having. But what happens in that spatial drawing workshop? What is it exactly that you're teaching or sharing?
So what I'm sharing is, you know, the reference to the work that will be in the exhibition. But, you know, I usually start with showing examples of other artists' works, such as Monica Grismala, Fred Sandbach, you know, these great artists have used line and the line in very different ways. With Fred Sandbach, it's very minimal, although he would never have described himself as minimalist, you know, taking the line for a walk and, you know, the sense of creating planes and illusion within the space. And then you have Monica Grismala, whose tape drawings are very energetic, very physical, very visceral, and really, you know, confronts the viewer with this sort of incredible multi-layered, multi-lined expression of drawing. So I usually go through a few different examples with the students, but then we kind of get down to the drawing because they're quite keen to get on. Perhaps they haven't used, you know, things like threads and especially tape. You get these great adhesive tapes now in different colors, and they haven't used that before as a medium and as an expression. So I discuss physicality, stretching, you know, to reach and to create an experience of either, you know, an open drawing or something that's more like a, you know, Monica's work, you know, a sense of almost, you know, being able to create a kind of a web of, you know, intimacy or a sort of hidden space and enclosed space. So so it can be opening up or enclosing. So we explore, you know, but I allow them to get on with their own ideas, you know, in a way to extend their own practice. And at the end, I generally, we have a little quilt, and then we generally join all the drawings up, so it becomes one large installation.
Now, by joining all the drawings up, you mean the different members of the workshop are doing drawings with tape and other objects in space, you know, kind of working with that space, and then everybody's drawing is connected within that space, so it looks sort of like it's all connected on the walls and the floor.
Yeah, what we do is, because we do use the walls and the floor very much, we, you know, get the tape that's left, and we mark out, you know, join everyone's work. So then it becomes one work, or, you know, there's an attempt for it to become one work. And I feel that that's quite exciting as well. And then the participants get to take photos, and we look at detailed pictures, you know, that perhaps they can develop further.
I love that. I love that idea. not just visually, and it extending your own language and talking about that visually, but the idea of joining them all together is really wonderful, as opposed to, you know, artists and everybody being separate. It's nice to be able to see that both. Well, what's the next one after that? There's another, you were about to say before we went further into this one piece, that there's another show coming up or something else you're working on?
Yeah, so this is a piece I'm creating at the moment. I'm fabricating. Again, it consists of structural elements. It's something that's quite important to me, to have that kind of hard edge, you know, with steel. I love fabricating things myself or working with people. So I'm fabricating these sort of display units, display structures, that I can hang my, another part of my practice is using a medium called latex and mixing that with other materials and displaying, so creating structures as a mechanism for displaying these draped fabric elements using latex.
And how will that come together? And how large is that? What's the size and dimension we're talking about there?
So with the structures, again, it's, you know, very much human. I'm quite tall. I'm about 5'10". But so for me, I kind of use my own body as a reference. So whether it be handheld, hand size, torso, or full, you know, full figure. So they're roughly about 1.9 meters tall. So not huge, but like doorways and frames of the door. They will support these latex fabric residues that I've created by either tracing off surfaces that I find in my environment, whether they be sort of rusted, used, semi-industrial objects, or whether they be actually created in the studio using various pigments and layering. They then will be peeled away from the surface they're applied to and draped over these structures. Does that make sense?
Not quite. I wanted to ask more about that because it sounds really interesting. So tell me a little bit more about that, because, yeah, I haven't seen images of that. And if you have them, there will be images of that in this interview. So the listeners
can
see.
Yeah, I'd love to send you some images.
But it sounds like these different objects, whether they're industrial ones that you made, you talk about drawing off them, but you mean extending the lines from them, or are you making casts from them somehow?
I'm casting them. So I'm using latex, which is a kind of, you know, liquid latex, which has the power, when you layer it up and you paint it onto an object and peel it away, you let it dry and solidify, you peel away this the latex, and it reveals the surface pattern of the object that you've applied it to. So there's an incredible artist that I always cite as an influence. Her name's Heidi Boucher. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She was a Swiss artist who also worked in LA, but returned to Switzerland and made imprints of various places, but her most famous was her old family home. So she painted liquid latex onto the interior, rooms of her family home, let the latex dry and solidify, and then peeled them away like skins. She called them skins, like a skinning type thing. But these residues, this latex peeling, reveals then, you know, all the details of a room, whether it be the door frame or the window frame or skirting boards. You know, they are all imprinted on, it's like a reverse version of a Rachel Whiteread piece. So Rachel Whiteread, her works are being solid, you know, casting
casting the interiors thing. Or something. Right.
Yeah. And they're solid, you know, like Heidi Boucher, my latex works are casting the skin of it. So therefore you're left with sheets of skins of imprints. But I'll send you some of those images because I think you'll find them interesting.
Okay, yeah, we'll put some of them in here so people can see them. And so then how are those skins of images, now that's clear, how are they assembled in the exhibit?
So for this exhibit, I've made a pattern. I used to work in fashion. Actually, I did work in New York for quite a long time with my sisters. So I'm cutting patterns from these skins to apply to these frames. So they will be applied and displayed on these frames, and therefore you'll have these kind of door-like structures covered in these skin-like, very thin membranes with pigment, secreted surfaces applied to them. Another great thing about this medium is when you have light, it really brings out the sort of glows, the skin kind of glows, and you find, again, the detail really comes to the fore.
That sounds exciting, and now I understand it, and I think the listeners do too. So when you, when is this show, and how much space will that be? How big are these pieces?
So this show opens 2 weeks today. It's in central London. It's a beautiful gallery called Thameside Studios. I'm exhibiting with a number of really great painters. The show is called Catamaran. Like I said, it's at Thameside Studios, which is a really large, you know, white cube type space. And I'm the only sculptor in the show. So I'll have a number of these kind of doors that will be positioned throughout the show, displayed either upright or on their backs, propped slightly, and they will have these draped, pigmented skins draped over them. The exhibition is primarily about color and form.
That's exciting, and I wish you luck with that. And before I ask you the last question, is there anything else you want to mention about what you're working on or plug anything? Is there something I should have asked you think that I didn't?
Well, I'm pleased to have been selected for a prize, which is the prestigious prize in the UK. It's a purchase prize sponsored by the Ingram Collection. I'm very much interested in trying out new techniques of materiality and potentially working with a scientist soon, again, using latex and recycled new media and looking into 3D printing. So, you know, I'm always curious with my work. I'm quite restless. I don't. I like to move between mediums. And so, I suppose my practice, while it has this kind of hard edge of geometric expression, as in the form of vertical ascension, I'm also interested in sort of skin-like drapery for elements and materiality, and I think that does come from my path of working in fashion and fashion styling. So again, you know, I'm constantly trying to push the medium, bring them together, you know, do they work, do they, you know, how to push it so, you know, you bring about that third element.
I like that. I'm glad you mentioned that as well. Andrea, what are you reading at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm reading a book called Flatland. It's a subtitle, A Romance of Many Dimensions. It's kind of quite a controversial book. It was written in the 18th century by a guy called Edwin A. Abbott. And it describes this kind of land where the sort of narrator lives in flatland, a two-dimensional land which is made up of lines and points. And he's then visited by another sort of being, which he doesn't quite believe, who then belongs to the third dimension. So in this other being's world, there is things like the cube and the sphere and things like that. And so it's then this dialogue of between these two dimensions, two dimensions and three dimensions within this book. You know, it's quite funny. It's very old-fashioned, even to the point the way they speak about women and women's rights aren't really quite where they are now in the day it was written, but it's also still quite a pertinent book and quite interesting in today's.
And let's talk about that a teeny bit, because I've read that book, and sure, it was a while ago, and to me, that book, what is the controversial aspect of it? What I remember of it, and I read it quite a while ago, and it was pretty young, it was about the mathematics of it struck me as really interesting, that it so clearly explained this idea of a two-dimensional world can't see a three-dimensional world, even if it's in front of them. But what is there? Is there social? I think I probably didn't even notice when I was reading it then. Is there social or political overtones to that? What's the controversial aspect of that book?
I do think it is that political element. You know, because he describes in this book the kind of hierarchy within that his own culture, or his own, the point, women are only points, men are lines, squares, and it depends on your social status. So it's very much about social status. There's also this kind of, the guy who's narrating it, who's in this two dimensions, when he describes it to his peers or to his superiors within his culture, he is then imprisoned for heresy. So there's this element of, this kind of do not question, the facts, the sense of how we're,
right,
indoctrinated with these beliefs, and anyone kind of challenging them are usually, disputed. It's about, belonging to the norm. Belonging to the norms.
Well, especially if they don't have proof, too. Right. Because it's like talking about God or a ghost or something that other people can't see, or germs even, right? That other people can't see. It's easy to without any proof. It seems insane or criminal or heresy, right? Yeah,
absolutely.
That's fascinating.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through at the moment, so we'll see how I get on with it. But it's a neat little book.
Andrea, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. And I will send you some images through of my other pieces that perhaps you haven't seen on my website, which is currently under construction. But you can see a lot of my work on Instagram. Like a lot of artists, we're using Instagram as some of websites at the moment, so you can see me at Andrea V. Wright on Instagram. But I look forward to sending those images through, and it's been a pleasure being a part of this program. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.